Welcome to an On The Case special on two recently heard appeals, both in the rating world. In the same week, the Supreme Court heard UKI Kingsway Limited versus Westminster City Council. Then, the Court of Appeal heard the combined cases of Rossendale Borough Council v Hurstwood Properties and Wigan Council v Property Alliance Group Limited. Though each raises distinct points of law, Roger Cohen, partner at Brian Cave Leighton Paisner, is here to explain how both arise out of the interface of the billing authorities and the ratepayers, which, in the age of localism, is of increasing importance from the business point of view. Roger, thanks for coming in.
It's a pleasure, Jess.
Now, before we do get to the detail of these two cases, can you just sort of outline for us this commercial background that you say is sort of unites the two?
It seems to me there are two important commercial items. The first is local government and central government is under increasing pressure to collect taxes. For local government, this is relatively new. You mentioned the localism agenda. Mm-hmm. At the moment, most rating income goes to central government and is then distributed through a system of grants. But the government's policy is one of localism, which means local authorities will keep the rates that are levied in their area. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. The second thing is empty property rates, which to my mind are a tax on failure and are driving much of the avoidance agenda.
That sets the background. So let's sort of get into how those issues affect these cases. So should we start with UKI Kingsway, which was a dispute about service of a completion notice. Can you explain the background to that case and the issues raised and why they're important?
A completion notice is a rating creature. It's the device which is used by a local authority known as a billing authority to give notice to an owner of a building that's new or structurally altered that it's complete or it's capable of being made complete such that it should be entered into the rating list. Mm-hmm. And once a building's in the rating list, then the rates bill will follow. So what happened in UKI was an attempt by the billing authority to serve a completion notice, but there was an issue as to whether or not they had been successful in achieving that.
It was they sort of was handed to a receptionist, is that right?
Well, that's right. The notice was sent to the building in Kingsway where the works were being done.
Not far from here.
Not far from here. And a helpful receptionist scanned the notice and sent it to the offshore office of the owners of the building. So the question was, did that amount to good service of the notice? The Court of Appeal concluded that there had not been good service. Their reasoning was that this was not the way in which you should be dealing with a notice which has the effect of triggering a liability to pay business rates, which is, after all, a form of taxation. From the point of view of the building owner, they were looking for a way of avoiding having to pay their business rates. Although, in fairness to them, they had raised with the billing authority at a relatively early stage the fact that there was a question mark over the service of the notice.
Are disputes over completion notices, I would imagine, you know, in a situation where the billing authority wants to try and get the money in as quickly as possible and the building owner, the opposite of that, wants to try and defer payment as much as possible. Are disputes over completion notices common? And
where one expects to find an issue about a completion notice is not about the service of the notice. Mm. There may be an issue as to whether or not the building is complete or whether it's capable of being made complete within the time limit set out in the notice. So you do sometimes find a substantive issue which is dealt with by the rating tribunals in that way. But it's relatively rare to have a dispute about the service of the notice, as occurred in the UKI case.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the appeal was heard last week by the Supreme Court. And can you sort of outline for us what the key battlegrounds were in that appeal?
Yes, I can. It's a question, Jess, of approach. In the upper tribunal, the deputy president approached the case in what I think of as a litigator's mindset. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the notice has to be served, and despite everything, the notice did end up with the owner of the building. In the Court of Appeal, while not seeking to be prescriptive mm-hmm. about how service should take place. They looked at it more from the point of view of a regulator, more concerned for the due process and how the service was achieved. And they said, look, we're really sorry, but if you're serving a notice which is going to trigger an obligation to pay tax, mm-hmm. you've got to go about it in a much more formal way.
And now, of course, we await the decision of the Supreme Court, which all goes as it usually does. It will likely now be in early 2019. Are you expecting any particular result?
I have a prediction. My prediction is that the legal team for the building owners have just got the ball over the line. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to phrase it like that because one can understand there being some sympathy for the rating authority mm-hmm. because, after all, they've got rates to mm-hmm. collect. And I think it was in recognition of that that the building owner did raise with the authority at an early stage the fact that there was a problem over service. On the other hand, the challenge for the barristers representing the building owner was that the Court of Appeal hadn't really said what good service looks like. Mm. So they had to assist the justices of the Supreme Court with that problem. To my mind, they've just about done that, but we'll find out, as you say, sometime in 2019.
I should have prefaced asking for your prediction by asking if you were a betting man, but it sounds like you wouldn't be putting your house on the result.
I certainly wouldn't be putting my house on the result, although if I lost, that would mean no more council tax, I guess.
Every cloud. Let's turn then to the combined appeals in Rossendale and Wigan, where the battleground shifts to the business rates payable on properties that were formerly occupied but are now empty. What are the arguments involved in these cases?
Well, let's go back to the commercial background, because this is all about empty property rates. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got an issue with empty property rates because
is your opportunity.
They are a tax on failure. Empty property rates are a tax on the failure of an investor to find a tenant or the failure of a business to find a business use for the space that it owns. To my mind, it's almost unique in the British tax system. And we can see there's something wrong with it because so much time and energy is invested by building owners and by those who advise them in finding ways around empty property tax. What happened in Wigan and Rossendale was that the owners of empty buildings sought to avoid a liability to empty property rates by putting in place a structure of leases so that they transferred the obligation of being the rateable occupier from themselves to a company which had been set up for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. And so just to explain, what advantage, if successful, does that give? How does that help circumnavigate the problem?
There's a relief which is available against empty property rates, mm-hmm. which is 3 months holiday from empty property rates if the premises have been occupied for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. So if you use the right mixture of leases to special purpose vehicles set up to do this job, mm-hmm. they're in for 6 weeks and then they go out again, you can build up a track record of periods where there is no empty property rates payable mm-hmm. because the relief period kicks in. And so the question is, if you set up a structure, is that a structure which is effective in law, or, as the local authorities would say, is ineffective because you're dealing with a structure which is artificial? Or, here comes a quaint legal concept, if you pierce the corporate veil, mm-hmm. you see the artificiality mm-hmm. with complete clarity.
And so how would you outline the competing arguments in this appeal, in this particular case?
Legally, it's very interesting, and the Court of Appeal will have a really serious job to do mm-hmm. in order to analyse and judge on these issues. But the two points are these. Number one, is the arrangement and artificial arrangement. Mm-hmm. Now, in tax, the revenue and taxpayers and their advisors have to be very careful about artificial transactions and transactions which don't produce any commercial result. In property law, we're really not bothered about so-called artificiality. To date, it's not a concept that has had any relevance in working out whether one rates avoidance technique works or whether certain other property law issues get resolved in favour of a landlord or a tenant, as the case may be. But here there is an attempt to say the structure was artificial, and it will be interesting to see whether the Court of Appeal give that any traction. The other argument concerns piercing the corporate veil. So there are some situations where it's legitimate for the court to look behind the fact that there are companies which have a role to play in a situation and look at who's behind those companies. Who are the directors? Who are the shareholders? What are the connections between them? Now, ordinarily, that's relevant when one's dealing with fraud. To be absolutely clear, there's no suggestion in Wigan and Rossendale that anyone's committed any fraud. But there is a suggestion that it's legitimate to go behind the veil and see that it's the owners of the property who would otherwise be liable for the empty property rates who are pulling all the strings. Now, again, it will be fascinating to see what the Court of Appeal do with this. But there was a case a few years ago in the Supreme Court where the justices there said that piercing the corporate veil is something that gets written up in the textbooks, but it very rarely gets used in practice.
With the first case, the UKI case, I mean, that's a dispute about service, which, whilst important, is perhaps limited to certain sort of sets of facts or other cases that could be influenced by it. But it sounds like with this one, with the empty property rates aspect, that the potential effect of the decision could be widespread, because obviously there must be other building owners trying to avoid empty rates in a similar way.
Well, I agree, Jess. I mean, in UKI, Westminster could have, who were the billing authority concerned, they could have at least capped the problem by giving another notice served properly and without prejudice to the contention that they'd done the first notice properly as well. There is a certain amount of conversation about how widely the Supreme Court decision in UKI will apply to the service of other types of notice. For example, a notice to break a lease. Well, we'll have to see what sort of a steer the Supreme Court give us. We may find that there are some interesting points of general application. But in relation to the empty property rate situation and Wigan and Rossendale, undoubtedly, this is going to have a lot of impact, because empty property rates is the scourge of building owners. And equally, there are rating authorities who are desperate to maximise their income. So however that case is decided, it's going to have an impact and be relevant to many of our listeners.
And the Court of Appeal has also reserved judgment, and that's also likely to be early in the new year, or perhaps maybe just about a little before Christmas. Are you willing to gaze into your crystal ball again on that one?
My prediction is that the structure will be upheld. It will survive scrutiny. I say that because the judge in the High Court pinned his decision on piercing the corporate veil. My prediction is that the Court of Appeal will say that the doctrine of piercing the corporate veil can't be used in that way. I also predict that in relation to the alleged artificiality of the transaction, the Court of Appeal will say that doesn't apply here. But we're in complex territory, and so that's a prediction, but tentative at the same time.
Whichever way it goes, do you think there's any likelihood that a year down the line we might be looking at this appeal in the Supreme Court as well?
You never can tell until you've seen the judgment which is being appealed against. There is a read across to another area of intense landlord and tenant interest at the moment, which is the Francis case on opposed lease renewal, where there's also an issue about artificiality. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see what the Supreme Court decide there. Mm. We'll have to see what the Court of Appeal do with the Wigan and Rossendale case. But there's going to be something for everyone in all of those judgments.
I'm sure there will. And we will have, of course, plenty of coverage. And I'm sure you'll be part of that, as you so often are. While we're sort of thinking and looking ahead, it's a coincidence that these two important appeals were both heard in the same week. But does the fact that these disputes are being contested at the courts of the highest level that indicate that against the challenging backdrop that you've outlined, tensions are getting even greater between billing authorities and ratepayers?
It's easy to think of rating as being a series of disputes between ratepayers and the valuation officers mm-hmm. who administer the rating list. What the localism agenda has done, what the drive towards rates retention has done, is to bring the billing authorities in as key players in all of this. So when occupiers and their advisors are looking at the dynamics of a rating situation, there are three players in the relationship: the valuation officers who administer the list, the billing authorities who collect the money and increasingly benefit from it, and the ratepayers, or those who think that they ought not to be paying rates.
So do you think we'll be seeing more disputes in this area coming to court in the coming months and years?
I'm sure that there's going to be plenty for specialists in the area to deal with, and there'll be lots for their clients, for the occupiers and owners of property to watch out for.
Not least, I imagine, in the check, challenge and appeal area.
Well, check, challenge and appeal is the new process for seeking to challenge a rating assessment. Mm-hmm. It presents many challenges. It's a new way of doing things. There's a lot of technology about which there are all sorts of views, and in effect it's been the big bang for the rating world. We'll just have to see how that pans out.
Many thanks for coming in, Roger, and talking about these cases. You have been listening to On the Case from EG.